This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to a special Thursday edition of NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, who for some reason just left the studio, so we're off to a banging start already. I'm sure he went to grab something. Producer Michael Remus gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Thursday night. Worth noting, we'll also be on next Thursday as well. Anyways, 2 hours of hockey talk for you. Joining us in about 10 minutes' time is going to be Andrew Gross. He's the beat writer for the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. Obviously, the Jets and the Rangers play tomorrow evening at MTS Center, game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Watch it live on TSN Jets. Joining us in the second hour of the show to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins, Mike Colligan. He's the Pittsburgh Penguins correspondent for HockeyWriters.com. He's going to join us, update to us on everything that's going on in Pittsburgh, where, as per usual, they are dominating in the regular season, but the question for the Penguins is one of what they do in the postseason. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. We start this Thursday evening by looking back at last night's Jets-Vancouver Canucks game, where the Jets ended up losing 3-2 in a shootout to the Canucks. As a result, they now are 5 points behind Dallas for the final wild card spot, and the Vancouver Canucks have moved 1 point ahead of the Winnipeg Jets. Gentlemen, Richard, Ezra, good evening to you both. Your thoughts on last night's game between the Jets and the Canucks?
Yeah, good evening, Drew. Good evening, Richie. It was a tough one last night because we knew that it was a must-win for the Jets, and they were coming into that game after a disappointing loss. And when you go into a game and you haven't won in four, and now they haven't won in five, obviously, you knew that there was a lot of pressure on them. And I thought that their start was really, you know, left a lot to be desired. I thought it took at least a period and a half for the Jets to get going there. And it was disappointing to see that. They were in a position to win. And Evander Kane, if he scores on that penalty shot, the Jets go up 2 goals. And then Andrew Ladd also has a breakaway, and they have the opportunity there, right? So the game yesterday, it was an exciting overtime game. And again, they leave points on the board. But when you're coming into that game after you left points on the board against Colorado, it's just not good enough at this point. You can crunch the math any way you want, Richie. The Jets cannot leave points on the board. They need clean 2 points. And especially when you consider that these teams, Vancouver, Phoenix, Minnesota, Colorado, all of these teams, they're just adding to their point totals too. So when you give them points, you're just really hurting yourself. So it wasn't the best effort, but I thought Andrew Ladd was great. I thought Andre Pavlik, I was telling the guys even before Vancouver scored the second goal, I thought he was the first star of that game, and I thought he kept that game close early. So aside from that, I thought Mark Stewart had a good game. I thought Jim Slater had a good game. Obviously, that tripping penalty didn't work out too well for Ryan Kessler. But for the most part, again, it doesn't really matter in the end analysis of the season, Richie. If they don't get into the playoffs, these points are being left on the board, and that's happened. And they're in a funk. So now, the record that they had under Paul Maurice has really, it's almost for naught now, because they've gone 5 games without a win and left so many points on the board against a lot of teams that they should be beating. Vancouver was a team last night. They look like a shell of their former self. They look like they're just packing it in and ready to hit the golf course. So to me, that was a game that you could win. And at points in that game, it looked like the Jets were going to take over. But again, if you don't finish, and again, I go back to the Kane penalty shot and Andrew Ladd's breakaway, you got to score there and put that game away when you have the opportunity.
Yeah, you know, they don't play good enough. They don't play well enough, excuse me, against teams that are mediocre. You lose against Islanders last week, bad loss, can't do that. You lose against Vancouver last night, playing without Daniel Sedin, making Henrik Sedin far less effective. They lose Kessler in the middle of the game, although I thought he kind of sleptwalked through the game anyways. You're playing against a Vancouver team that doesn't really have any kind of offensive firepower. A guy who scores 2 goals against you who hasn't scored a goal all year. And against a goalie who just got shelled for 6 in the third period, and the team 7 against the very Islanders we just spoke about. You can't lose those games if you want to be taken seriously in the playoffs, and they're done. The team's out. They are 5 points out of the playoffs. Dallas has 2 games in hand and the tiebreaker, so they're actually 6 points out of the playoffs with two games in hand.
Well, that's key. It's not as you said, 5 points. It is 6 points with those extra games in hand. And yeah. and again, if you're talking about the chances of the Jets making the playoffs, not percentage, you're going to have to win, what, 12 of 15 games?
No, that's not enough, I don't think.
13 of 15?
I haven't done the math, Ez, but first of all, they're not winning that. This team is going on a road trip to Dallas, Phoenix, San Jose, L.A., and Anaheim, I believe.
That's right.
Those are the five teams.
Yeah.
Lucky to get 2 and 3 on that trip. And, you know, the one thing I have to say about the team, although I think their top players have played fairly well, you know, Wheeler and Ladd in most of these games, the Scheifele injury as an excuse is mind-boggling to me, because that the biggest thing that represents is that the team wants excuses. Good teams don't look for excuses. This team looks for an excuse. The Scheifele gets injured, that is a built-in excuse for why the team's not successful. Notwithstanding the fact that the team was built in a way that Scheifele was going to be counted on to have his success would be important, but it wouldn't be the backbreaker for the season, right? You know, we know that Jokinen can't play second line center. We know that, you know, Little's had a nice year here. But Scheifele, his success was going to be important to the Jets. But how the injury to a rookie center who was tearing it up and then wasn't playing as well, I thought, before he got hurt, but still well overall, is the reason for this team going 0-5, essentially, aside from these extra points they're getting here, 0-5 over this huge stretch, which wasn't that much that difficult of a schedule, is troubling. It's troubling for me. If I'm a fan of the team, if I'm part of management of the team, I'm troubled by it.
You can't blame the way the Jets have played over the last five games on Mark Scheifele's injury for this, just for the simple fact that name me, with the exception of one or two teams in the NHL right now that don't have injuries.
That's right.
Every team has injuries. So that should never be an excuse. Even if Ladd, Little, and Wheeler were injured, you cannot use that as an excuse. That means that you have to find a way to win without those guys. Certain teams can win with lacking better players. The Jets are probably not one of those teams, but you cannot use that as an excuse. Did they miss Mark Scheifele? Absolutely. Mark Scheifele was coming along, and he was arguably a Calder Trophy candidate. He's out for the regular season. There's nothing you can do about that. He's not coming back for the regular season, and you have to step up. And you mentioned Ladd, Little, Frolik, and Jokinen did have a very nice assist on Frolik's goal.
Yeah.
Vander Kane hasn't... you didn't think it was nice?
Well, it was a nice assist, but I mean, Jokinen's...
Well, I'm just saying.
He is what he is. Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't had...
Nice
he hasn't,
pass.
He hasn't set the world on fire. I'm just saying.
Right.
He made a nice play there. But you've got Blake Wheeler with one goal in 10 games. You've got Vander Kane with no goals in 10 games. These are your guys that you're paying a combined, what, $11 million? Again, if it's not Andrew Ladd every night, or it's not Brian Little, somebody else has to get goals. It's got to be Setoguchi. It's got to be somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, it's really, they're dependent on that one line.
I know we got Andrew Gross up here at 10 after, but just one last point before we go. I guess we can go leading into break here. When you have Vancouver comes to town, Sedin's out, Kessler goes out, Brad Richardson, a bunch of other guys. Colorado.
Well, Vancouver also given up 7 goals in the previous.
I'm talking about injuries here.
Okay.
Colorado. Stasny's out.
Yeah.
Parenteau gets hurt in the game.
Yeah.
Tanguay's injured. Islanders. Sit all their guys for the trade deadline, and Tavares is out. Take the injuries and throw them away, because that ain't no built-in excuse, especially against the teams that they're losing to right now.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Andrew Gross joins us to talk about tomorrow night's Jets-New York Rangers game. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
.615 in the evening here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. This is NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to NHL Midweek our good friend from the Record newspaper in New Jersey. He is the beat writer for the New York Rangers, Andrew Gross. Andrew, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. How's it going today?
Doing very well, thank you, Andrew. How are things you're in Minnesota, or St. Paul, to be more precise, where the Rangers and the Wild will play coming up in about 45 minutes' time or so, then on the plane to Winnipeg right after?
Actually, I hate to disappoint, but no. heading back to New York. I'm going to skip tomorrow's game in Winnipeg. I have some stuff to take care of in New York on Friday and Saturday. So missing the peg this time around.
Now, Winnipeg in the middle of March is just, you must be crushed beyond words to not join us here at this time of the year.
Well, no comment.
There you go.
Well, Andrew, what am I going to do with that air mattress that I put out for you, though?
Well, I'm sure if it's still frozen, wait till the spring and let it defrost. And,
Andrew, we obviously got to start. I've brought you on to talk about the Rangers ahead of tomorrow night's Jets-Rangers game. Want to start with Marty St. Louis. He was the big acquisition the Rangers made at the trade deadline in exchange for Ryan Callahan and the draft picks. It's only been a few games, obviously, but you know, how has Marty St. Louis looked in a Rangers uniform so far?
It hasn't been the smoothest of transitions quite yet. He's got one assist to four games, and certainly I think both the Rangers and St. Louis are certainly expecting more from him after acquiring him. It's been a bit of, as Coach Elaine Vigneault was talking about this morning, it's a little bit of chemistry. He certainly he can reestablish it with Brad Richards, played together in Tampa Bay for so long. They're well acquainted with each other. It's just a matter of finding the correct left wing to play with those two right now, it seems like. Vigneault said he might change up the lines tonight. He's had Carl Hagelin there, but the issue has been, as AV was talking about this morning, what every line needs is a guy who will go to the net and become a net presence, and that's certainly what the Rangers had in Ryan Callahan when he played with Hagelin and Richie. But now, between Hagelin, Richie, and Marty, they're kind of three guys who like to, be more on the perimeter, more like to have the puck on their sticks, and like to create and not so much go head directly towards the net. So it's a matter of figuring that out. But, St. Louis has talked about the adjustment. It's weird for him. He was in one spot for 14 years. He was a, revered icon down there, and now he's with a new team at age 38. So, It hasn't been the smoothest transition.
Andrew, at the end of for the latter part of last game, he was playing. St. Louis was playing alongside of Derek Stepan and Rick Nash, I believe it was. An interesting combination. I'm not so sure those players, their games mesh either. Is that something they're going to move away from now for the game tonight?
I don't think that's what you'll see. Again, at the end of that Hurricanes game was just a disaster for the Rangers, who didn't put forth the necessary effort to get a point out of that. So by the end of the game, maybe the last, 8-9 minutes or so, Vigneault had chopped three forwards out of his rotation. He was down to nine. Hagelin was one of the guys he sat. So he was just kind of mixing and matching there, trying to get something going. And get a point out of there. Never could find that. So I don't think it's going to be St. Louis with Stephen Nash at this point.
Andrew, when I've watched the Rangers this year, and they've always had a good group of defensemen, that was the staple of the team that almost went to the Stanley Cup Finals a few years back against the LA Kings. I've noticed that John Moore is a guy that Alain Vigneault seems to trust a lot more, and since Kevin Klein's come over, they seem to be really gelling and getting a lot of ice time. Is that something that you can actually basically look at and say that Alain Vigneault has more confidence in that third pairing than John Tortorella did previously?
To a certain extent. John Moore, I think his game translates more towards what Alain Vigneault wants and seeks out of his defenseman than maybe what John Tortorella's system dictates. But it's also a matter of, John Moore was struggling earlier this year. He was paired with Michael Delzato. And I'll tell you what, Alain Vigneault did not trust his third pair quite as much when it was those two. But, a couple of things happened when they acquired Kevin Klein for Delzato. First off, it allowed John Moore to go back to his to the left side to play, his natural side, the side he's used to. And with Kevin Klein being a right-hander. And also, it paired, Klein and Delzato's mentality and game and what they look to do is kind of similar. Klein is a much more simple stay-at-home defenseman. And I think that's given Moore a little bit of confidence that he can jump up in the play, and it's not going to cause a defensive mishap because he gets caught up ice. You know, there's still some kinks in the system, and I think Klein's game had kind of, I don't want to say deteriorated, it's kind of slowed down a little bit, even though he did get his first goal as a Ranger against the Hurricanes the other night. He hasn't been quite as reliable, either trying to move the puck out of the zone or even defensively. So, there's a little bit of question as to when Rafael Diaz, who was acquired from the Canucks at the trade deadline for a fifth-round pick, might jump into the lineup for Klein. Hasn't happened yet, but I think Klein needs to have a strong performance or a couple of good performances here to keep Vigneault from trying out Diaz.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're talking about the New York Rangers with Rangers beat writer Andrew Gross. He writes for the Record newspaper in New Jersey.
Andrew, back to St. Louis for a second before we go over the rest of the roster. Matt Zuccarello and St. Louis, seeing them on the same ice surface over the past couple of games, players with a lot of similarities, diminutive left-handed shooting guys who like to possess the puck and like to probably pass more than shoot. Is St. Louis going to be looked at maybe as a bit of a mentor for Zuccarello? I know Zuccarello's had a very nice season so far, but even progressing further in his career?
Well, Zuccarello was talking right after St. Louis was acquired of, that St. Louis was a guy he looked up to, and that's, I'm not trying to be funny or make a pun there, but, when he was growing up in Norway, or as a younger player, he looked at St. Louis and said, like you just alluded to, there's a guy who's about my size who has made a career in the NHL despite being, on the shorter side of the spectrum. And, Zuccarello said that kind of gave him some inspiration to believe he could make it to this level. So there is a little bit of that. I haven't seen much interaction between them yet in the locker room in that mentoring role, but very much so that St. Louis is a guy that Zuccarello has tried to emulate as he's, developed an NHL career.
Andrew, you look at the Rangers' back end, and we talked about it a little bit briefly a little bit ago, and you got Dan Girardi obviously signed that contract extension with the Rangers right before the trade deadline. It was sort of the thought of either Girardi or Callahan's going to sign, and obviously Callahan got traded. Girardi ends up signing 6 years, $33 million. Is that a deal that you think is good value for both sides? How has that deal looked sort of now that we're out of the fog of war that surrounds the trade deadline?
Yeah, no, I think you got him for what, a cap hit of $5.75 million, and that's the cost of doing business in the NHL for, Girardi is he plays on the top pair, him and McDonough, but, between him, McDonough, and Mark Stahl, you really have three defensemen who could be your number one defenseman on if they were spread out on other teams, mm-hmm. So... Yeah, I thought that was very fair value. I know the Rangers were reluctant to go to that 6 year. They wanted to cap it at 5 years. Girardi's going to be 30, so they were a little concerned there. But you know what? I think it's a deal that's fair for both sides. So, like I said, that's just the cost of doing business in the NHL. To get a guy of that quality under $6 million, I thought was a good get for the Rangers.
Andrew, the Rangers have 16 games left. A lot can change standings-wise. They're currently in fifth place, tied with Columbus there. When you look at the teams that are currently battling for those middle spots, what team do you think the Rangers want to play most in the first round of the playoffs?
Play the most? Let's see. I know they got... They've done well in Philly, although not quite as well this year. I really don't think the Rangers look at it that way. If you're asking me personally, I think the team they might want to stay away from is the Blue Jackets, just because the Blue Jackets would be very motivated to beat the Rangers, led by Brandon Dubinsky. And certainly, the Rangers have enough ex-Blue Jackets to make that series just, full of intrigue. But, there might be some distractions there as well. So maybe they don't want to play that. I would think, the Flyers, and they know they can beat the Capitals if the Capitals snuck in there. You know, and I think, you know, I'm going on the assumption that the Rangers are going to somehow finish either in second or third place and avoid that wild card matchup with the division winner, because I think that would be tough. You know, either Pittsburgh or Boston in the first round might be a tough task for them. Certainly Boston, after getting eliminated, the Rangers have played with the Penguins this year. So I think if they're in a wild card, they'd prefer to play the Penguins over the Bruins. They're just a little too physical for the Rangers the way they're constituted.
Andrew, last question. We know you got to get to the line rushes there in the pregame skate in St. Paul. Rangers' next captain, Ryan Callahan was the captain of the team. Is this something they're going to wait until the end of the season for? And if so, is Ryan McDonough that guy, or should we expect something beforehand?
No. They've tabled that discussion until after the year, and that was one of the first questions asked of Alaine Vigneault. He said, you know what, we're not even going to deal with it this year. We've got three A's. They gave Dan Girardi an A. Mark Stahl has an A. And Brad Richards has an A. And I think a lot of it depends on the off-season stuff. They're going to try and get, I firmly believe they're going to try and get Saul signed probably this summer, rather than, you know, go through what they did with Callahan and Girardi again with him next year. If he's signed long-term, I think he's an excellent candidate for captain. I think Ryan McDonough, you hit nail on the head there. I mean, he doesn't have a letter, but he's certainly a team leader. He would be an excellent choice as a captain. And then the other thing is, you know, if Brad Richards is not bought out, he's kind of the veteran voice in there. He sets the tone a lot. But it's a matter of whether Brad Richards is going to be around for next season or not. So, you know, I'd put my money, if they can re-sign Stahl, on also giving him the C.
Andrew Gross covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. Andrew, thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy tonight's game between the Wild and Rangers in St. Paul.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
As always, Andrew, pleasure's ours. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Big thank you to Andrew Gross, Rangers beat writer for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior wearing a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard designed for you by the Linden Market Dental Center, it's an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, tomorrow evening, MTS Center, 7 p.m. puck draw. Finally back to another 7 p.m. game. These 6:30 games and 6 p.m. games, we're getting, they're a little hectic for us to get there in time.
I like them.
Really?
Yep.
Too hectic for me. I don't like it. Anyways, tomorrow night, the Jets and the Rangers face off at MTS Center. A Jets team, obviously, we talked about in the first segment, after losing to Vancouver. You know, they're way behind the eight ball right now. And, you know, we're speculating 15 games to go for the Jets. You know, what number it's going to take. It's going to take, like you said, Richard, somewhere probably around, you know, 12, 13 wins in the next 15 games to get into the playoffs. Certainly a difficult task with this difficult schedule. And, you know, the Rangers are certainly no pushover. They're looking like a team that, you know, we talked about it right after they acquired Martin St. Louis. Mm-hmm. They're looking like a team that is built for the playoffs, and it would not be a surprise to any of us if they ended up making a run in the Eastern Conference playoffs based on their depth in forward, their depth of the defense, and the all-world goaltending of Henrik Lundqvist, who's going to be in net tomorrow for the Rangers against the Jets.
Right, and a lot hasn't changed. I know later on in the show we're going to compare the Kings of 2 years ago, Richie, to the Kings now, and I think it's a very good idea that Drew came up with to compare those two teams, because they have a lot of players that are still around from that Stanley Cup winning team, and there are a lot of players around from that Rangers team that was a win away from beating the Devils and going to the Stanley Cup Finals, and this team we talked about this, I believe it was about a month into the season, we were talking about the Rangers and the Flyers. Maybe we can pull that up when we do our Stanley Cup preview show. But I said both of those teams, I think, are going to make the playoffs. And I had both of those teams making the playoffs. But you look at what's happened with the Rangers this year, and you have a lot of players that have struggled offensively. And Richie asked Andrew Gross about Derek Stepan and Chris Kreider. These are the young guys that are really the key players offensively for this team. Yes, Brad Richards is a key player, and Rick Nash. Rick Nash a little bit differently because he's a veteran, and these players are younger guys that are having to really take over the team. And you've got Matt Zuccarello, and you've got lots of good players, but really, once these lines are clicking, this is a very tough team to beat. They're one of the best defensive teams in the NHL, and they have been for probably 4 or 5 years now. You mentioned Henrik Lundqvist. The group of six defensemen that they have is probably the second or third best, I would say, in the entire Eastern Conference. You've got a very weak Eastern Conference. Yep. You've got Dennis Seidenberg out. So this group of defensemen, we asked Andrew Gross about John Moore and Kevin Klein. He said that Kevin Klein, he hasn't been as impressed with, but John Moore is a guy that was acquired from Columbus who I really like. I'm a big fan of his, and I think that this team is a team, Drew, that you don't want to play in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that, but both of you have said in terms of the talent that they have. Now, they're a good passing team. They can move the puck pretty well, and that's back end, front end. That's both sides, which helps. Scoring sometimes a little bit of an issue. You know, I think some of their guys probably defer more to passing than to shooting, and I think that's something that some of these lines and the chemistry, that's what you're waiting for, what you're waiting to develop, right? That's what happens, is because when you have, say, you know, Richard, St. Louis, and Hagelin playing together for a bit, although they moved Sagan, St. Louis to the Stepan Nash line later in the game to try and create offense at the end of it. But you look at St. Louis, you look at Richard, you look at Hagelin. Hagelin's going to be your speedster. And St. Louis and Richards both like to pass a lot. So somebody's got to start shooting a little bit more. I think some of these guys have to be a little bit more selfish. But this is a pretty well-rounded squad. I mean, there are some deficiencies. You wonder if they're big and tough enough up front from that perspective. St. Louis, Zuccarello, talented players, not big guys. Richards, not a physical guy. You know, Brassard. So you do have some guys who aren't the most physical. But at the same time, guys like Dorsett and Rick Nash plays a big game, and Stepan certainly not small by any means. So they have a pretty nice mix. And on the back end, I like their mix of toughness and puck moving, as you mentioned. So this is a team to be reckoned with. I think a team still in the stages of developing chemistry with the current roster. Mm-hmm. And if you're Glenn Sather, you know, you're lucky you're in the East, because I think they're going to make the playoffs. I think that, you know, that's, you look at the standings right now, and the Rangers are sitting at 74 points. Certainly not 100% secure. Yeah. Look at the other teams, only 2 points behind them.
Not home and dry, certainly.
Right. Yeah. But I think that they're going to make it, and I think that Sather's hoping, Jeff Gordon and the management group there, that they get that, you know, they get that chemistry rolling by playoff time, because as you both said, the Eastern Conference is just so weak this year. I could see the Rangers beating any team in the Eastern Conference, and I could see them beating multiple teams in the Eastern Conference. You know, we can get into that later in our playoff preview show, about a month away, I guess, now. But there are very few teams to me that are looking anywhere close to unbeatable.
No, especially in the Eastern Conference, you're right about that. The thing about the Rangers, I mean, they were off to a very slow start at the beginning of the year, largely due to the fact, I think, that, you know, Alain Vigneault, new head coach, new system, you know, the players were pretty much the same.
They played their first 10 games on the road, didn't they?
Yeah, they played a huge number of games on the road, and they had lousy training camp because, you know, the joke that we said way back when in September was that the Rangers had a training camp in every different city that Glenn Sather owned a home in.
Right, and that was because of the renovations.
That's
too.
Right, renovations to Madison Square Garden.
Glenn Sather was actually just in Cuba looking for more cigars. That's what he was. Okay. Yeah.
But the Rangers are, I mean, I think they're beginning to, you know, it takes a while to adjust to a new head coach. And especially, you know, John Tortorella was very demanding in the system that he ran last year. And now you're bringing in Alain Vigneault, and he's running a different style for the most part. So I think there is
let me get onto that for a second, because it's not a different style. It is a different style, but it is a completely different style. Especially in the way he runs the bench and runs the room. You watch Henrik Sedin last night. Henrik Sedin played about 23 minutes last night, guys. I know overtime. But there's a reason Henrik Sedin looked like a shadow of his former self last night.
He's not the type of player that can play those type of minutes.
Well, and if he is, it's certainly a difficult jump to make from the Vigneault, who's protecting him at all times, mm-hmm. the way he was using him, offensive situations. He was playing him limited minutes, you know, for a top player, producing at a high level. And then he goes to Tortorella, who's playing him into the ground. In New York, if you look at Vino is not a guy who's going to yell at you, but if you look at the average ice time, I want to get into that for a second. You look at the average ice time of the forwards on this team. Okay, now St. Louis is going to be a little bit skewed, right? But if you look at it, Richards is playing the most out of any forward on the team, not even 19 minutes a game. And so what you're seeing is four lines, as we talked about the depth, but the way he employs it, you know, you're looking at Stepan, 18 minutes. You're looking at Brassard, 15 minutes. Rick Nash, 17 minutes a game, guys. So these guys are not going to be worn down. So when we're talking about the playoffs, keep that in mind, because those teams will be more fresh. We'll be ready to go. And the Rangers don't travel a ton, guys. I mean, they had that long road trip at the beginning of the season. But they play New Jersey, the Islanders, Philly. They don't fly to any of those cities, as far as I know.
Right, because they're train rides away.
Train rides or bus rides away. So if the Rangers have a pretty deep team right now, I think. I think they're a pretty well-rested group. That bodes well if they make the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned something really important there, Richie. Alain Vigneault did that for years in Vancouver with those really good Canucks teams where he really wouldn't play anybody more than 18 or 19 minutes a game. And I think it's really been refreshing for them, and I think you're starting to see them playing their best at the time that you want them to be playing their best. The New York Rangers have kind of spent most of the season kind of in the 7th or 8th wild card spots, and now they have a really good chance to catch the Leafs or the Habs for possibly the 3rd or 4th spot. I don't think they're going to catch Pittsburgh.
That won't matter because it'll be in division.
Sorry, that's right. So, I mean, 4th mainly, home ice. So, I mean, they're in a position to really take advantage of a weak Eastern Conference, a weak division. And it's really nice to see because earlier on the season, you had to know that their season was going to normalize. Because, really, you look at their lines and they don't have one of the best top lines, but they have three really good lines, and really they don't have a first line. And when you look at the way what he's done with that group, Mark Stahl's quietly had a really good year. His numbers aren't going to be as good offensively as they were a few years back, but he's quietly had a good year. They've got Girardi under contract. Lundqvist is starting to play like the old Lundqvist. All of these ingredients make up for a team that is wanting to go on a long playoff run.
I agree with you, Ezzy. I mean, the concern for the Rangers is typical. It's one, like you mentioned, of offense. They're 18th in the NHL in goals for, 7th in goals against, so they're certainly defensively responsible. And, I mean, it's hard to have a bad goals against average when you have Henrik Lundqvist in net because he's that good of a goaltender.
Yeah, but great D, too. It's not been his best year.
No, it hasn't been his best year. I mean,
it's still good, though.
It's still good. I mean, for a guy who's having a quote-unquote down year, I mean, his goals against average is 2.5, save percentage of 916.
Well, there was
Henrik Lundqvist numbers, right. But I think that a lot of that it might be sort of skewed because of the slow start to the season that he had.
Well, a few months ago, Cam Talbot came in and he was getting some starts over Lundqvist because Lundqvist wasn't playing very well. And the Olympics, you'd have to think, helped him and gave him more confidence the way he played in the Olympics. So, he's playing better, but I don't think he's going to win the Hart Trophy this year.
No, I think that's pretty safe to say.
But look at that from another perspective too, guys. When Lundqvist came up with the Rangers and he really started to prove himself. 2006, he played 70 games. 2007, he played 72. 2008, yep. He played 70. 2009, he played 73. 2010, he played 68.
I think those days are over, Richie.
So I think when you have him at 50, right, you know that he's not going to get anywhere close to the 70 level. Now, he hasn't been in the 70 level since the end of 2000 and the 9-10 season. But 68, I mean, you've gotten close. So what's happening there is the same thing. You're being able, you know, you're playing Talbot, because, you know, Biron retires and Vino didn't like Biron or didn't think he was good enough, whatever it may be. Biron retires, you play Talbot, but you also play Talbot to be able to rest Lundqvist for when the games matter. And, as was pointed out, the Olympics only make that harder on a player, especially sure. A goaltender who's relied on and takes his team through six games in the Olympics, right? A lot of these teams didn't play as many games.
I think come playoff time, or even really throughout the whole season, there's sort of been, especially now that the trade deadline's passed, there's no drama really left with the Rangers. Even if, you know, after the trade deadline in years past, Tortorella would somehow make there be drama, or, you know, you'd be concerned about, you know, how many lines are they running? Are, you know, think about it. When they went on that playoff run, you know, he was playing four defensemen for, you know, every minute of the game. And I know Ezzy's going to address that in six things later on this week. So now they're almost just quiet. They're just sort of going about their business in a workmanlike, professional manner. Not a lot of drama there now. You know,
and that's
Marty
what Vigneault does, though.
Right. Marty St. Louis will settle in a little bit better. He'll get more accustomed to his teammates. You know, I think we said it on the show, like I said, it was either last Saturday or two Saturdays ago. if you were a betting man and you wanted to pick out one of the teams in the Eastern Conference that's not the Penguins or the Bruins, mm-hmm. a strong case can be made for the Rangers to be your team to put a couple dollars down on them.
Right, and we got to give some credit to Richie's boy Scott Arneil too. He's done a really good job with Alain Vigneault and this team.
Assistant coach for the Rangers.
Right, and former Manitoba Moose coach and Winnipeg Jet. Mm-hmm. The way that they're playing right now is it took a while to get there. And they've gone through some adversity, but we talked about it. Now that the trade deadline's been some days have passed since the trade deadline, you look at the situation, how they were able to rid themselves of Ryan Callahan, who had no interest in re-signing, and then Marty St. Louis...
Well, had an interest, but not at the same level. That's not the same number,
you're
not
right,
level.
You're right. Yeah. I should mention that. Marty St. Louis basically falls on their lap. And mm-hmm. Marty St. Louis, who would you rather have come in there? A guy that had the success in 2004 with Brad Richards. It seems like... They have a good mix there. There's the youth, as I mentioned, guys like Stepan Kreider. Those guys have struggled. I mean, they came in at mm-hmm. young. Those guys, people think they're a little bit older. Those guys are still not even in their mid-20s yet. And those are guys that have had varying degrees of success, and they've had to kind of learn how to get over those struggles. And you look at that team, and again, four good lines, a good decor, two good goalies. Things are looking up right there.
And, you know, in respect of tomorrow night's game, one thing you want to, as he mentions, three lines. And that's one thing you're going to have to rely on a little bit tomorrow is these guys do have three lines that can score at any point in time, and the Jets are going to have to rely on the depth on defense. You saw last night, you know, it was kind of an unfortunate play. Party falls on his coverage of Burrows, and it was kind of a lucky goal anyhow. But Party and Ellerby, two guys you're going to have to count on tomorrow to play against, say, Derek Brassard's line because... Yep. You know, Derek Brassard's a pretty talented third-line center, guys.
He was Columbus's first-line center a couple of years
ago. So that's the pressure you're going to have tomorrow is a team that can come at you. Far more talented up front than Vancouver was just yesterday.
Well, Derek Brassard is, you know, averaging 15 and a half minutes. You talked about time on ice, meaning you might see Ellerby and then Party. They're going to have to, you know, match that time on ice.
Well,
yeah, maybe not exactly.
They're going to put the top four more, but you're going to have to put those guys to, yes.
Yeah, those guys aren't going to be able to play very easy minutes like they were, like, the, you know, Vancouver didn't have the depth that New York has. We'll see it. It's happening tomorrow, 7 p.m. puck drop at MTS Center game. You can hear live on TSN 1290. When we head to break on the other side, we're going to talk about the NHL general managers meetings that wrapped up a couple days ago. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. Big thank you to the official sponsor of the Illegal Curve game-winning goal and the Illegal Curve 50-50 contests. That's CompuStitch Embroidery Design. It's been serving Winnipeg and area for over 15 years. We specialize in small to large runs with expert attention given to our customers' needs and, above all, budget. Keeping you in stitches since 1996, it's CompuStitch Embroidery and Design. You can find them at 51 St. Anne's Road or via the phone at 204-943-9415. That's CompuStitch Embroidery Design. Guys, general managers' meetings earlier this week in, where were they, Boca Raton?
Yeah, Del Boca Vista.
Yeah, Del Boca
Vista. Phase 2.
Phase 2, okay. You know, a lot of talk, as these meetings usually are, is a lot of talk with less action than talk. But there were three decisions or three recommendations that are going to come out of the meetings. They're going to go to the competition committee in June, and then if they're recommended by the competition committee, they'll potentially go to the Board of Governors for approval. So these would all be changes for next year. The primary one that people are talking about is sort of, you know, how to reduce the number of games that go to the shootout. You know, there was obviously talk prior to these general manager meetings about the 3-on-3 overtime. That's what Ken Holland, the Red Wings general manager, has been advocating for for years.
He also advocated the 10-minute 4-on-4.
Or a 10-minute 4-on-4. Both of those ideas did not have a lot of traction. What seems to have the approval of the general managers, and I expect will be in place for next year, is that you will have a longer change in overtime, meaning that between the third period and the start of the overtime period, the team teams will switch sides, much like they do currently in the playoffs. So the you're on one side, you're going one direction for the first and third period. You'll now go you'll go one direction first and third, and then the other direction second and overtime. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on that being the solution to the NHL shootout problem?
I mean, it probably helps a little bit. I don't think it's going to be a huge help. You know, Drew, I think a lot of times what you see in the NHL now is teams will hold the puck with their defensemen and make a change. So I do think the long change will lessen the amount of games that are decided by the shootout. And I like that they're suggesting and recommending that change. I just wish the shootout was gone altogether. So this is a step in the right direction as far as I'm concerned, so long as they build on that step next.
Okay, right. I don't know what the proposal is, but I know Kenny Holland was talking about modification, that it would be, I believe, 7 minutes of overtime, first 4 minutes, 4-on-4, and then 3-on-3. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd vote for that. Anything that reduces the number of shootouts, I would vote for.
Brian Burke talking about that proposal. Ezzy, your thoughts? You agree with Brian Burke there?
Yeah, I do agree with Brian Burke. And I told Richie during the commercial break that Brian Burke tends to have a lot of good ideas that I agree with. He also suggested that to kind of maybe reduce some of the hits along the boards, he came up with an idea and he called it the bear hug, where you can allow defensemen to kind of hold up the checking forward. And this is the thing with the shootout. I don't think it's going anywhere, and I think we all agree it's not going anywhere, because even if you don't like it, a lot of fans do like it. And whether it's last night, everybody gets really excited, even though the Jets didn't win. You know, Richie, how I feel. I don't like it. I don't think it's a good way of...
It's such a gimmicky way to solve. And it's going to be... I mean, we talk about the proportion of games that are settled by the shootout. Well, that's determining who's making the playoffs. What a joke.
Look at the Chicago Blackhawks. They've got 15 overtime loss points, right?
Which is great, because they'll mean nothing when they get to the final, when they're the best team in the playoffs.
There's too many points. I think the best idea, Drew, is to change it to a system where you don't give points just for getting to overtime. That's what makes it's these extra points. It's absolutely ridiculous with these extra points. It's too much.
Here's Edmonton Oilers general manager Craig McTavish on potential rule changes to the way faceoffs are conducted.
The one thing that had the most legs, maybe from my perspective, was the face-off alignment. I'm not sure that I agree with the hash marks being separated further, but I like the idea of a centerman that gets thrown out stepping back, because I know the leverage that you use, and that's going to, you know, stop the cheating on the first face-off, and it'll make the second face-off have a little bit more integrity, the second face-off. So that sounded like...
Quite convenient of Craig McTavish to combine the two other rule changes into one. The first one being face-off violators. So, you know, it takes about 4 hours to drop the puck in the NHL now. So the rule is, the recommendation from the general manager is that no longer is the centerman tossed out of the face-off. Rather, they are forced to attempt to take the face-off from between 12 and 18 inches further back. And then the second one is that the hash marks aside the offensive zone face-off circles move from 3 feet apart to 5 feet apart. Richard, your thoughts on both of those?
The second one I want you to clarify more than the first. I was reading about it. I would like you to clarify. The first one I think is a good rule for a couple of reasons. There's part of me... one reason I like the rule is because I think too many times these coaches, understandably so, get obsessed with sending two centers on the ice. So what you do there is you negate that, and you have players who are kind of playing there. You know, you'll have a guy center pop on and then pop off the ice. Instead, you can sustain more offense, I think, by having the winger out there and not having to worry about that. Having two centers on the ice goes back to, I mean, the 96 World Cup, when Slater didn't put two centers on the ice and they blew a draw at the end of the game. So this is a problem that's been going on for quite a while. The other problem, I think, what teams are really worried about is on the icings. What's happening is you're having it, the team's icing the puck and they're tired. They've been on the ice for a minute, 10 seconds, you know, 45 minutes, whatever it is. They come back and they take a draw. But what they do is, because they're tired, sometimes they'll send the winger in to take the draw with the express purpose of getting kicked out.
Yep.
So he gives his team another breather of 5-10 seconds. So that's one of the things I know the NHL is not happy about. And I don't think they want to leave it to the discretion of the linesmen or the refs to call penalties based on intent, because it's very difficult to determine. So I think that's another reason why. And my concern with the rule, before Ezzy gets in here, my concern with the rule is how arbitrary is it to kick somebody out? And that's exactly what I think the issue is. You know, it's arbitrary to determine intent. It's arbitrary to determine, I think, sometimes if a guy is cheating or his teammate's cheating in some cases. And then what happens is you certainly disadvantage the team by having the center move back. They lose the draw. They lose the game. Who's going to get all the blame? So I think the rule in the theory makes a lot of sense to me. In practice, I'd need to see it for more than a short period of time to determine whether or not that's something that I'm on board with.
Right, and really the general managers are really trying to end a loophole that the players have found, right? Mm-hmm. It's you're not violating the rule by sending in the winger to take the faceoff, but you kind of are in the sense that you're doing that as a delay tactic and it upsets mm-hmm. the integrity of the faceoff and all that. I guess if the G, I can see, as Richie mentioned, kind of in theory it makes sense. You're kind of penalizing the guy and you don't want to just kick him out. But it seems like you might as well just keep the system the way it is if it's going to make it impossible for the guy to win the faceoff, right? So to me, I'm not really sure if I like that one or not.
As for the second one, and I'm going to admit that I'm still not 100% clear what this means, but I think what it is that the wingers in a face-off line up next to each other, separated by the hash marks. They can't violate the hash marks. Right now, there's 3 feet between one hash mark and the other hash mark. I believe and this is a Doug Armstrong proposal, mm-hmm. and I think we might have audio of it. If we do, Remus, you can get that queued up. What I believe he's proposing is that the hash marks sort of be spread further apart from each other, meaning the players won't be lined up shoulder to shoulder. Instead, there'll be 5 feet of room between where the two line up for each face-off.
And the purpose being what?
For the purpose being less, I guess, less of a scrum, less physicality, less of a mucking situation. Do we have Doug Armstrong? We have Bill Daly on it. Okay, here's Bill Daly, NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly, on this potential rule change.
The group recommended some changes to face-off procedure and potentially instead of ejecting for a violation of the face-off procedure, maybe penalizing in terms of making the centerman take a step back.
Okay, Remus is going to get the correct clip.
No, that's interesting, but that's the first one we talked about there, the second one we talked about. I know some of the reasons why they'd want to do that rule. I just don't know necessarily that I think that's a great idea. You know, you have what you're seeing a lot in the NHL is you're seeing a lot of contact, and the guys are jumping in because they're trying to edge the other guy. So, for example, if you're lined up against another winger or the defenseman, you're trying to edge into the circle. So if you don't edge, then it takes away some of the violations of the draws. It leaves more room, less contact, less pick plays and all that stuff. I don't know if that needs to be done. That's a little bit more drastic for me. I'm against that one. I'm not opposed to seeing it, but in theory, I'm against that one more so than I am the face-off rule where you back up.
Right. I'm with Richie on that one because, first off, I love those battles, and that's what really makes the North American game unique in that sense, that you battle for the puck and you got to tie up your guy. And really, I don't know if it's a problem that Richie mentions that it's drastic. I don't really know that that's something that really needs to be implemented for the simple fact that the referee and the linesman will already break up two guys if they are too close or if they're obstructing each other and trying to get to the face-off or they're trying to get positioning. That's already something that the linesman keep an eye on. So I don't know if it's necessary to move those two hash marks apart when really the thing is, Drew, they're still trying to get to the same place, right?
Yeah.
What is that actually going to accomplish? It's just going to keep the guys from, you know, slashing each other and tying each other up. They're going to do it anyway.
I can do without the constant tweaking that the NHL seems to do each and every off season, but obviously that's not going to change anytime soon. There are a number of other ideas that did not make it through into the recommendation stage. Then we'll hear about them probably for years to come.
Just quickly, I mean, for real me, quick. You know, we talked about the shootouts and all that. To me, the one thing, if you want to speed up the game and reduce the injuries and all that, the trapezoid is something that should have been discussed more. Get rid of the trapezoid. How many times do we have to say it?
You've said it a lot. We'll say it some more. You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we come back, 6 things we learned this week on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You can't tell us stories like that, Richard, off air, right when we're coming back from break. It's amazing the show doesn't dissolve into giggles for the next 10 minutes. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Legal Curve. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Looking for something to do tonight? When we get off air, starting at 8 p.m., Chris Porter at Rumors tonight through Saturday night. He won last Comic Standing Season 4, of course. You remember that reality TV show. He was the winner of Season 4 of Last Comic Standing. And, of course, still to come in Rumors next week, Charlie Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
You know him from The Chappelle Show. Charlie Murphy will be at Rumors. Only tickets left are for the Wednesday 10:30 p.m. show. So you can check out RumorsComedyClub.com or give him a call at 204-488-4520.
I know it's been a week since Chris Kattan was at Rumors, but that image of him eating pizza was that was one of the funniest things I've ever seen at a Jets game.
At the Jets game on Saturday
that
afternoon
was amazing.
There, yeah.
It's actually quite similar to the way you eat pizza. You're just not on camera.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
Yeah, all over myself and in my beard now. But
yeah, and you don't actually chew. You just swallow it whole like a duck. You know, things of that nature. Anyways, let's go to six things we learned this week.
Six.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
Ezra Ginsberg, Carl Soderberg has quietly had a productive season for the Boston Bruins, and his versatility has made him an invaluable asset heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, Carl Soderberg is playing on the third line of the Boston Bruins right now, and he moved to center and he was playing wing. He actually can play both, but he's a guy that I didn't know a lot about. He was a player that played for Linköping in the Swedish Elite League last year, and he came over, if you remember, and played for the Boston Bruins and then didn't play that much in the playoffs. But he's a guy that I didn't know a lot about. You can look at stats, but you don't know a lot about a guy, and he's a guy that really has had quietly had a very good season. He's on pace for a good offensive season. And the versatility that he's going to offer, they've got Louis Erickson, Richie, dropping down to the third line. They've had Louis Erickson on the first and second lines, but really right there with Chris Kelly and Louis Erickson, you've got a mixture of scoring, you've
That's
got
right.
grit.
Yeah.
Chris Kelly's a good penalty killer. Carl Soderberg's been playing a little bit on the penalty kill as well. He's really quietly had a nice 20-goal season there, and you know there's more coming. So he's a guy that I've really become a fan of, and we all know how good the Boston Bruins four forward lines are, probably the best in the NHL with the exception of a few other teams. But Soderberg's a guy that's really come into his own, and he's a guy that was drafted and played in Swedish too, so he's kind of a guy that's matured later.
Played in Swedish or played in Sweden and speaks Swedish?
Right, yeah, exactly. So Soderberg, not related to Steven Soderberg, the director.
Five.
Thanks for clarifying that last point there. That was concerning. Richard Pollock, for an acquisition that was questioned at the time, and he has since been on the trade block, allegedly, Eric Cole has been a nice addition to a young Dallas Stars team.
Well, it's a young team, Drew. Obviously, they faced some adversity last week, and this week, I'm happy to see that Rich Peverly's okay. But Eric Cole's a guy who's played alongside Cody Eakin a little bit here, and if you look at their roster, they have so many guys who are young and so many guys who are talented. And a guy like Eric Cole, who, you know, sometimes it isn't performing to levels that people expect, but he works hard. He's always skating hard. He goes to the net. He does the little things. You know, him and Ray Whitney have really done a nice job of being the veteran presence. The veteran presence is on that team. And they demonstrate it by their smarts, by their work ethic. And I have to say that you watch that squad, it's a nice mix. That's Jim Neal kind of from Detroit, too. And you remember Datsu came through, Iserman, all those guys. Certainly the guys in Detroit were at a different level than the Dallas guys, the veterans now. But it's the idea that you're augmenting your young talent with veterans who are guys who aren't mailing it in. And these two aren't, and I like the way that they're playing, especially Cole, his effort level. And a lot of guys don't go to the net, especially guys who get older and who, you know, have some wear and tear in their bodies, like Eric Cole has, and neck injuries and such, back injuries. But I have to say, it's been a real nice find. And you even heard about rumors of him being dealt earlier in the year, and it's fitting in well.
Why is it that Eric Cole only excels on American teams? He was really good on Carolina, really good on Dallas, but on Montreal and Edmonton, didn't work out.
Yeah. But his numbers aren't. His numbers aren't tremendous. And you look at goal total and assist total and all that stuff. And you say, okay, 15 goals, 13 assists in 65 games, it's certainly nothing to write home about, but it's they don't need him to be that dominant guy. I know they're paying him a lot of money. They don't need him to be that dominant guy. They just need him to do what he's been doing, and I think he's been doing a nice job of that.
I also think, and you sort of touched on it, he went through a traumatic injury himself, mm-hmm. an on-ice injury, and we're thrilled that Rich Peverly sounds like he's going to be okay, but I think that, you know, having gone through that injury, he might be able to help settle down that dressing room, and, you know, now that they know Rich Peverly is going to be okay, mm-hmm. You know, they can sort of not build on the experience, but, you know, sort of put it in perspective and carry on with, and maybe
brings them closer together. Unfortunately, yeah. it happened, but it does bring them closer together. And so, you know, the way you react to that, and they're going to become even more of a team than they were before. And I thought they were quite a nice team. Like they stick out for each other. If you watch them play, they're having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. And one is the way that team has been built.
Ezra Ginsberg, you like the New Jersey Devils trade deadline acquisition of Tuomo Ruutu. You say he's fit in nicely on the line with Jaromir Jagr and Travis Zajac.
Well, they traded Tuomo Ruutu. That was kind of one of those moves, and Richie was doing the show all day long mm-hmm. during that Wednesday trade deadline show. Tuomo Ruutu was acquired by the Devils for Andrei Loktionov, a guy that was struggling. He wasn't working out on the Devils' lines. They had him down on the third and fourth lines. And so really, you trade him, and they also got a 2017 third-rounder, which is weird to trade for a draft pick that far in advance. But Richie, Carolina actually had to take some of his salary.
Mm-hmm.
So they ate up some of Ruutu's salary, but he's got 3 points in four games, and he's a guy, you know, you talk about Marian Gaborik, he's one of those guys, too, that has had tons of injury problems and really hasn't been healthy for a full season in a while. But Tuomo Ruutu's fit in there. They've had all different types of players playing with Zajac and Eliash and Jagr. Pardon me, I should say Jagr and Zajac, not Eliash. They've got him not on that line right now, but sometimes he plays with Jagr. But he's been a nice deadline acquisition. The Devils are by no means in a playoff spot right now. They're battling tooth and nail for one of those two final playoff spots. But really, a change of scenery has really helped for him. He was with Carolina for, I believe, 5 years, maybe six. And he looks like a different player. He looks like he is enjoying the change of pace. And by the way, just on this topic, does Jaromir Jagr age? Like honestly, 57 points? He's 42 years old? It's unbelievable.
I remember when I went to high school with him.
You remember who Ruutu was traded for? Nobody in the room remembers,
Andrew Ladd.
Andrew Ladd, Remus remembers.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. Chicago, Carolina back mm-hmm. in the day. And there you go. It all comes full circle. Carolina retained 20% of Tuomo Ruutu's salary in that deadline deal.
Before you hit the button there, Reem. He's the kind of guy who, if you take off some of his salary, he really provides a lot of things that you want. He can play wing, he can play center, he can be physical, he can do that stuff. But the money he's making, it just makes him look like a worse player than he actually is.
Yeah. Three. They just started against the Edmonton Oilers on TSN, so you can turn that on. But Richard, you say that if the Blues want to make noise in the playoffs, Vladimir Tarasenko has to turn his game up a notch.
Yeah, but not by noise, I mean in context. Noise for them is making a run here, you know, not winning the first round, although if they, you know, they can't play LA in the first round this year based on the way they're standing right now, the two of them. But I have concerns. I probably might be in the minority in terms of St. Louis. I don't love them as much as everybody else does. I do like a lot of what they do, but they need to be able to have secondary scoring. Jaden Schwartz is a real nice player. He's really played well, I thought, recently. Vladimir Tarasenko is a guy who they need to be able to put points up on the board. I mean, they're going to count on their top line of Steen, Oshie, and Backes to perform. But when they get into the playoffs against these top teams, or, you know, against the Minnesotas or Colorados or Chicago's, whoever they end up drawing in that first round, you have to be able to score in your second lines at least. And Tarasenko is a sniper. He's a scorer. On a team that doesn't have a lot of scorers, natural scorers, and he has to be able to perform. I know Hitchcock hasn't loved his consistency and sometimes the effort level. He's got to bring that. If that team is going to take the step, you know, conference finals, cup finals.
Yeah, he won't play if he doesn't play the way Hitchcock wants him to play. He's not afraid to bench him.
If the playoffs were to start today, it would be the St. Louis Blues and the Dallas Stars in the first round.
Two.
Well, Anaheim's been tanking, right? So, I mean, you have St. Louis's number one seed now.
Yeah.
How good would that series be? Is there any such thing as a bad first round series anymore?
Well, in the East there might be, but the West, no.
Yeah.
Well, Anaheim, St. Louis, Dallas, Anaheim, Minnesota, San Jose, Los Angeles, Colorado, Chicago.
All the division games this year are going to be unbelievable because right now be Habs, Leafs, I believe, and the Rangers, Flyers.
Yes. Habs and Leafs first time since 1979 is what if the playoffs were to start today. Who are we on to? Richard. No, we're on to Ezra. Sorry. Ezra, New York Rangers head coach Alain Vigneault has shown more confidence in his third D pairing than his predecessor, John Tortorella.
Try to answer your question with your question. Try to support your yes. sixth thing or your third thing. Our sixth things overall, or your fifth thing overall, by asking Andrew Gross of the Bergen Record about this question. Well, so I by the way, I mean, I think that's cheating right there.
Well, Richie, you practice law. You know how important it is to have support, evidence, precedent.
Yeah.
So really, Richie, you should be proud of me, academically speaking.
I don't think hearsay evidence is allowed in trial. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, well, Drew, I'm innocent until
so long as I didn't hear you say that, Drew. We're okay.
Anyways, as your point yeah. being that you think that the third Alain Vigneault's confidence yeah. in John Moore and Kevin Klein will pay off in the long run.
Well, if you listened to Andrew Gross, and we had him on in the second segment of the show tonight, he said that Alain Vigneault doesn't really like Kevin Klein so much that he has a spot guaranteed in that third pairing, mm-hmm. and they might use Yannick Weber, who was acquired from the Vancouver Canucks.
Rafael Diaz.
Rafael Diaz, sorry. Those two guys came from Montreal to Vancouver originally. That's why I got them confused. But John Moore's a guy, as I mentioned before, he was acquired from Columbus, and he's a great defenseman. Small guy, but great skater, Richie. And he's a guy that I think on a team like the Jets, you could see him in the top four. But on the Rangers, he's on the third pairing there. But Alain Vigneault is playing those guys more. And Girardi and McDonagh typically have played 30 minutes a game. And not to say that they won't, but to show more confidence in John Moore, one of the reasons why they traded Delzato for Klein was because they liked how Moore was progressing. So I think that's a nice change from Tortorella, who leaned on those top four guys a little bit more.
One. To wrap up six things, Richard Pollock, and I'm sure that we've said this before on this show, the Washington Capitals are a team without an identity, and that is evident on a game-by-game basis.
Yeah, and we talked about it a lot before, but I want to be a little bit more particular here in terms of just their in-game strategy or their inability to follow Adam Oates' in-game strategy. There's a disconnect there, guys. And it's that Oates wants them to play a certain way, or they're just not, you know, does he want them to play a certain way and they're not playing it, or they can't play it? I mean, that's the question, because Adam Oates might take the fall for this team, and George McPhee's contract is apparently up at the end of the year. We've talked about that before, so I don't see him being retained. It's been a long run there. He hasn't been able to get that team over the top. And I don't think Adam Oates is the problem.
I agree.
It's the team now, and so the way it's structured. But even the team, the way it's structured, offense, not as defensively efficient, not that aggressive, physically aggressive, and all that stuff. That is, it's just, this team is not able to, either Oates isn't able to coach this team to do what he wants, or this team isn't able to just play any style that isn't able to be coached, basically. Like, when Bruce Boudreau had success with this roster, more talented roster than there is now, but with the Washington roster, it was a bit of a free-for-all. In a nice way.
He let them open it up.
Controlled chaos. And Adam Oates likes them to create offense, too, but they can't play that way anymore. And you watch them against these teams they play against, whether it be Pittsburgh or the Rangers, whatever it may be, you look at a team that doesn't seem to have much of a strategy. It doesn't seem to be able to adapt to the other teams. And I'm not putting this on Oates' shoulders. I think George McPhee, unfortunately, this team is just, talent-wise, he's put together a real nice squad. But unfortunately, he hasn't put together a nice mix, a good enough mix to beat the best teams. And I think their window, at least for this group, the core of this group, is closing. That doesn't mean they have to create rid of Backstrom or Ovechkin, but some of the other guys, like Mike Green, those guys, those windows are closing a bit there.
Those are the six things we learned this week. On the other side of the break, we're going to learn a lot more about the Pittsburgh Penguins with Mike Colligan, the Penguins correspondent for HockeyWriters.com. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes past 7 o'clock here on NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the program Mike Colligan. Mike is the Pittsburgh Penguins correspondent for HockeyWriters.com, and he's a frequent guest on this fine show. Mike, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Doing very well ourselves. Thank you very much for asking. Mike obviously brought you on to talk about the Penguins, and you know, as we've come to expect with the Pittsburgh Penguins, there they are, sort of at the top of the Eastern Conference. You know, battling it out with Boston for the top spot overall. But you know, the regular season success has always been there. The playoff success has been the problem for the Penguins. Do you think this year is going to be any different? Is this Penguins team built more for a playoff run than the team has been the last couple of years?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think heading into the playoffs last year, they were certainly the team to beat, and maybe hindsight has changed that narrative a bit, but that was a team that was just so loaded after what general manager Ray Shearer did at the deadline, getting Jerome Iginla, Brendan Morrow, Douglas Murray, Juuse Jokinen. I mean, with the salary cap situation and the freedom that the Penguins had, they really went all in last year. So I think from a roster standpoint, certainly not in the same place that they were last year, but I think more from a coaching standpoint and kind of X's and O's, they are better built for playoff hockey. And Jacques Martin, who we know well from his days as a head coach in the NHL, has joined the Penguins coaching staff as an assistant this year. And I've noticed a lot of difference, I think, since he came on board. They're playing a more conservative style, not necessarily the run-and-gun style that we saw out of the Penguins the last few years. And I think we all know that when you get into the playoffs, you need to win those 1-0 and 2-1 games. You can't necessarily outscore every opponent that you play.
Mike, before we get to talking about some specific players, going back to the NHL trade deadline, we wanted to get your opinion on the moves that the Pittsburgh Penguins did make, acquiring Marcel Gauch, acquiring Lee Stempniak. What did you think of the moves that Ray Shearer made, and what did you think about the move that they didn't make? We heard rumors that they might be in on Ryan Kesler.
Yeah, they were certainly very in on Ryan Kesler, and I think that's not going to go away. I think we're seeing what's happening in Vancouver, and it would be a surprise if those talks heat up again once we get to the draft in the offseason here, because I think the Penguins still really want to get Ryan Kesler. He wasn't a rental situation. He was a guy with term left on his contract at a pretty nice price, and I think the Penguins saw the ability to get a player that is really one of the elite two-way centers in the NHL today. But I think what happened when Vancouver, for whatever reason, we seem to hear a lot of different stories around that, decided not to move Kesler. And that's where Shiro kind of went to plan B, and the third round pick he had in the Kesler offer was then thrown to Calgary for Lee Stepniak. Stepniak's a guy that's very streaky. When he's on, he's scoring in a goal a game, and then he can go 3 weeks or 6 weeks without very little at all. And I think he's actually clicking very well with Crosby so far. He's a guy that thinks the game at a pretty high level, maybe a little undersized, but he's fitting so far. And I think when you have Marcel Gauch as kind of your real defensive shutdown center that can play third line or fourth line and really do the work that you need in the defensive end, that's really some nice low price but high upside moves from Ray Shearer as a backup plan goes.
Mike, are you surprised that the team, you know, they added forwards and they could have used a little bit of forward depth, I think, and that's what they addressed. Are you surprised they didn't address the back end at all?
Yeah, Rich, I was. I thought, you know, with Chris Letang's stroke situation, I'd be very, very surprised if Letang is back this season, and you really have to think about his long-term career and health as well in that scenario. But with Paul Martin out with a broken hand that he suffered at the Olympics, he should be back by about the beginning of the playoffs, but Martin's a guy that's been injured before, and any setback there suddenly puts them really pretty shallow, I think, on defense. And I know Ray Shearer and Peter Chiarelli and some of the top general managers kind of say they like to go in with 10 NHL-ready defensemen, and I think with Letang and Martin not in that picture right now, they really don't have that depth. So I know they were looking around at kind of a depth defenseman as a rental. It didn't come to fruition, but if they do suffer injuries, and we've seen the Penguins, I think they now have over 100 man games, lost more than any other team in the league. It seems to be a recurring story with this team, but any further injuries on that back end, I think, are really going to test that depth a bit.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're joined by Mike Colligan. Mike covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for HockeyWriters.com. Mike, you look at the Penguins roster, and again, you know, we talk about, you know, the things that they didn't do. You know, a lot of people had them looking for somebody to, you know, fill that spot that Pascal Dupuis had filled prior to his injury. They've been playing a sort of rookie and young players up at that position. You know, is that still, do the Penguins consider that to be a weakness, and is that an area of concern for them, or are they happy going with the guys that they're going with, guys like Gibbons and others?
Yeah, they had tried Brian Gibbons and a number of others. It was a revolving door for a bit there, but Gibbons is an undrafted guy, very, very small, out of Boston College, but has pretty good speed. I mean, you'll notice him if you watch the Penguins, but just wasn't really producing on that line, and it's hard to believe that anyone with Sidney Crosby and Chris Kunitz on a line couldn't at least pick up a few points here and there, but I think he only had about three during his stretch on that line. So it wasn't working, and like I said, I think Stepniak's now at least getting an opportunity there. The real wild card is Bo Bennett. He's a guy that has been out for a long time, and quite frankly, the last few years has been missing a lot of time with injuries. But he should be a couple weeks out, and he's a guy that can play the right wing, a younger guy that doesn't have a ton of NHL experience yet, but he has that high hockey IQ, I think, to play with either Sidney Crosby, or if they'd reshuffle the lines, he's had chemistry with Evgeny Malkin in the past. So he's kind of, I think, a long-term solution if Stepniak can't seize that opportunity in the meantime, because like I said, I think over at least the three games he's had so far, two of them, he's fit in pretty well, and I think he's a good fit at least for the temporary term. And when you think about Crosby and Kunitz, they may not need much else. They're going to produce, they're going to get their goals, and I think as long as you have a capable guy in that right wing, you should be in pretty good shape.
Mike, Penguins head coach Dan Bylsma, he obviously didn't have the type of Olympics that he wanted to, and this year there's a lot of pressure on him to take this team basically back to the Stanley Cup Finals and to win the Stanley Cup Finals. If Dan Bylsma doesn't take the Penguins on a long playoff run, you think his job's in jeopardy?
Well, that was a big question last offseason, in fact, was he was heading into kind of his lame duck last year of his contract, and people wondered, you know, if the Penguins did not get out to a quick start this season, he might be gone. And so the team addressed that and basically made their initial decision in the offseason. They extended him a couple years on his contract to take that distraction away. But the talk is still there. I think you're right on the money there, where you look at the Penguins, they haven't won since Bylsma's first year in 2009, and he only came on for a couple months at the end of the season. So you could argue he really didn't have a huge role in it, at least getting that team to where they were. And since then, they've had very talented teams, haven't been able to even get back to the Stanley Cup final in last year, losing in a sweep to Boston. I agree, because I think it's a team that if they would go out in the first round, the expectations are there from the fan base, from the ownership that goes out and makes moves every single deadline and puts a lot of money behind these acquisitions. So I agree. I think the pressure is there. I don't know that his job is in jeopardy, but I wouldn't be surprised if that comes back into the picture as far as discussion in the offseason if the Penguins are bounced early.
You know, you mentioned Jacques Martin, Mike, and the effect that he's had. A guy who's, you know, coached in Ottawa and coached in Florida, Montreal, other places, of course. When he was brought on, you know, sometimes when you see a veteran head coach brought on as an assistant coach, the head coach takes notice, and there might be, you know, a little bit of a rift just because of, you know, being territorial. Was that at all an issue, or have these two gotten along quite well throughout?
Well, they haven't let Martin talk much, and I think that you can understand where that comes from, where they don't want the distraction of people really calling for Martin to be the head coach instead of Bylsma, and they've not given anyone an opportunity to really get that going. But supposedly Bylsma wanted Martin for a number of years. Whether that's true or not, I'm not too sure, but there were some interesting dynamics as far as adding an assistant coach without taking one out of the mix. And they have Tony Granato, who handles the forwards. They have Todd Reardon, who handles the defense. And now you're bringing in Martin, the experienced veteran, as an assistant, and that meant one of them had to be up in the press box every game. And I know that none of those guys really wanted to be there. They wanted to be on the bench. And so you've got a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and I don't know how they're going to fix that, or if they're going to just continue going forward here. But I think Martin, his influence is evident. It's been very positive for the team. I think this is at least the best coached Penguins team I've seen of the last few years. And maybe that's Bylsma maturing. Maybe that's Martin's influence. But the combination, at least, has led to, I think, a team that's coached pretty well to win playoff hockey.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. As we sort of has been the theme of the interview, we know it's a long playoff run or bust for the Pittsburgh Penguins. The last few playoffs series, the last few playoff appearances have been a bust for goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury. Is there any reason to believe that, you know, that we're gonna, you know, which Marc-Andre Fleury are we going to see come April? The one that has won a Stanley Cup and the one who's taken the Penguins to two Stanley Cup finals, or the one who's flamed out in the last couple series?
Yeah, Drew, I think that if I knew the answer to that question, I'd have a pretty interesting job as a soothsayer. But I think when I look at Marc-Andre Fleury, and if you're looking for kind of a signal as to which Jekyll or Hyde Marc-Andre Fleury that we're seeing, I look at how he sits back in the net. When he's calm, he's very composed in his movements. He doesn't get worked up or chase the puck. But when he lets in a bad goal or two, and I've seen this the last few years, and when he gets into high pressure situations, he doesn't wait for the puck to come to him. He starts chasing after it. He starts getting out of position and ending up in the corner on cross crease passes. And I think that's where it can really unravel for him. When he gets out of position, then loses all the organization and system work that he does with the goalie coaches. So I would watch for that. And he hasn't been to that point yet this year, at least in the regular season. But I think, as you know, when you get to that playoff hockey and it ramps up and maybe you let a weak goal, that can really unravel pretty quickly. And we'll see how that goes for Marc-Andre Fleury and the Penguins this year.
Mike Colligan covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for HockeyWriters.com. Mike, will we see you in Philly at the draft?
Yes, sir.
Attaboy. I
will see you there again.
We'll look forward to that. Mike,
we're
thanks so much
to Mike
for doing
before
this.
Then, though.
What's that?
We'll talk to Mike before then. The draft is 3.5 months away.
I know
away.
He will. I just want to make sure that, you know, we'll see him in person then, Ezzy, if that's okay with you.
That's okay with
the
me.
The table is set. Yep. I'll see you guys there.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Mike Colligan. And previous to that, big thank you to Andrew Gross for being our guest this week on NHL Midweek. In case you missed either of those interviews or any of the show in its entirety, it will be available for download on iTunes. You can also get it off of TSN1290.ca. Remus will put it up there tomorrow, Reem. You're going
to... Right after the show, man.
Right after the show? On TSN1290.ca too?
Yeah.
Remus, is that ZZ Top?
No, this is Queen.
Really?
That was ZZ Top?
I was supposed to go to ZZ Top, but...
you forgot your top?
Unfortunately, our friend Neil is under the weather, and we can't go. He's going to take me, we're going to
sit... What do you mean? Just go.
Yeah, you can't go without him?
Yeah.
It's kind of weird to go to a concert. Actually, I've gone to a concert by myself in Montreal. I went to see Audioslave by myself at the University of Quebec because nobody would go see me. And I made some friends.
Well, nobody would go see you or Audioslave with you, apparently.
That was great.
Some news out of Dallas. Not Dallas, pardon me. Colorado. I was going to say Denver there. News out of Denver. Rito Berra agrees to a 3-year contract extension with the Colorado Avalanche.
Well, that was quick.
Well, he has to, right? Because what they're doing there is they're acquiring him essentially to be the future backup. Sebastian Jaguar is intimated that he's going to retire at season's end, and I would be shocked if he returned. And, well, obviously with Colorado now, he's not going to return. That you, when you give up a second-round pick, guys, for Berra, first of all, it serves as notice that they think quite highly of him. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is, you know, when they're acquiring a guy like that, and you look at the squad and you say, okay, they know that they have Varlamov locked in as number one, so they're acquiring a guy like that to be kind of a permanent backup, which is a little bit rare in the National Hockey League, because generally what you do in the National Hockey League is you sign a backup to a 1 or 2 year deal, like Montoya's done, you know, 2 1-year deals, I believe it's been for Montoya. And or alternatively, what you do have is you have a youngster coming up, and then he sits on the bench for a while, like a Corey Schneider. So it's kind of rare to see a guy like Ramo move over to Colorado and then sign a 3-year deal to be backup.
Berra,
I always mix those guys up.
I know.
You see Rito Berra come over there, sign a 3-year deal behind a guy who's going to be making close to $6 million a year on a long-term deal. But the security for a guy like him also is something that's quite appealing, I assume.
Right, Richie, you nailed it there on all accounts there. He was playing well for Calgary, a team that has some good defensemen there, but the group of forwards, they're rebuilding, right? And if you look at what they've done there, Varlamov's already signed his extension, right? So he's looking at that and saying, okay, I have no problem being a backup. I'll take the contract. I'll take the guaranteed contract. This is his first year in the NHL coming over from Switzerland, right? So it makes sense, and there's nothing wrong with that. We might be in a day and age where we don't have the 76-game goalies anymore. Richie mentioned Henrik Lundqvist a couple segments ago. Marty Brodeur is another guy. There's a lot of 1A and 1Bs nowadays, but there's also teams that know who their goalie is going to be in that number one slot, and they're not willing to give a backup a multi-year deal. So good for him.
When you're a guy also like Vera, when you haven't really had any sustained National Hockey League success,
you take a three-year deal.
And a second. And yeah. You're 27 years old, so you're kind of giving up basically on that dream to be the number one guy, and this year probably was one of his, might have been his only chance. We don't know. These goalies can certainly turn into great players down the road, but he's taking the security over anything else.
Yeah, and then, if he proves to be a terrific backup, they could trade him.
That's right.
Or something.
That's right. Lindback, and that's happened obviously to Bishop, these other guys who get clogged down in a system with a lot of talent. So,
wanted to do our Who's Better segment. And I wanted to look at the LA Kings were obviously in town last week. And I wanted to look at the 2011-2012 LA Kings, the eventual Stanley Cup champions. And I wanted to compare it to this year's Stanley Cup LA Kings, the 2013-14 Los Angeles Kings. The Stanley Cup champion Kings finished with 95 points, 13th overall in the NHL. This year's Kings already have 89 points, 7th overall in the NHL, so they're a little bit better this year. If you look at it in terms of goals for, goals against, in 2012 they were 29th in goals for, 2nd in goals against. This year they're 24th in goals for, 1st in goals against. In 2012, they acquired Jeff Carter at the trade deadline. This year, they acquired Marian Gaborik at the trade deadline. In 2012, Anze Kopitar led the team with 76 points. This year, he's leading the team with 55 points, on pace for 68 points at the end of the year, which would also lead the team. In your guys' mind, which team is better, the 2012 Stanley Cup winning Los Angeles Kings or this year's Los Angeles Kings?
Very good question, Richie and Drew, because the team has changed, but it hasn't changed dramatically. You've still got the same core there, and I think we'd all agree that the acquisition of Marian Gaborik isn't going to give them the same boost that the acquisition of Jeff Carter has given them. Jeff Carter is entrenched on that second line now, playing with Mike Richards there, and this is his third year now with the Kings, obviously. I think the team now is better, and they're in sixth place now, and you've obviously got a different backup goaltender, Martin Jones instead of Jonathan Bernier. The defense, I think, Doughty's older. Robin Regier wasn't there. Slava Voynov's older. I think that the depth of this team is better. And I know they're in sixth place now, but they were the first team ever, I believe, to win the Stanley Cup being in that eighth seed. And not much has changed as far as they're not really the favorite going in. But this LA Kings team, they still aren't scoring goals at the level I think that Daryl Sutter and John Stevens and that coaching staff would like them to be scoring at. But I think that the depth of this team is better, and there's guys on this team that are older now. And again, Dustin Brown, Anze Kopitar, Mike Richards, who scored a goal against the Jets. A lot of these guys aren't having very good offensive years, Richie, but the team is still a well-oiled machine. This team is tough, big, and they're tough to score on. As Drew mentioned, the most important stat is they lead the league in average goals against. And that's with Jonathan Quick not really playing the best hockey of his career, by the way. Mm-hmm. So I think this team is better than it was 2 years ago.
Well, first off, I think they have to be better because you look at who they played, and correct me if I'm wrong, the road to the final last time around was through Vancouver, St. Louis, Phoenix, and Jersey.
That's correct.
Right.
Yep.
And when you think about it that way, the road this year will be tougher. So they have to be better. Right now, if the playoffs started today, they'd be playing San Jose. It's possible they may play Anaheim, but it's going to be one of those two. They're pretty locked in to the three seed right now in the Pacific Division. So you look at that right there. That is a tough matchup you're going to have to play. If you win, it's very possible you're likely going to play either of those teams I just mentioned. So you're going to play San Jose, then Anaheim, or Anaheim, then San Jose. And if you get out of there, you're likely going to play Chicago or St. Louis. And then you might play Boston or Pittsburgh. So they have to be better because the teams they played last time, due respect, they deserve to win the cup. If you win the cup, you deserve it. But the competition wasn't as, I think as significant. I think the teams on paper, Drew, are very similar. That LA team got on a roll, and Daryl Sutter's hiring was a big factor there in getting that team going. But I think when you look at the players when you have, I think you've had development of guys like Doughty and Kopitar have taken even, maybe you could argue, the next level. But you also see a little wear and tear on guys like Brown and Williams. So I think that probably all balances itself out. I agree with Ezzie Carter's effect on the team is more significant than Gabrick's effect now. You're talking about guys, one in the prime of his career, one acquired, one at the tail end of his career, one acquired. You know, you look at their back end, that's one of the things where you're going to get differentiate a bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the question is, do, you know, Rob Scuderi and is Willie Mitchell a guy, because Willie Mitchell was out the season that they won, right? Willie Mitchell, is he a guy who is as good as Rob Scuderi? Is Robin Regier at a point of his career where he can produce at levels that they need? So I think that's one of the things where you look, maybe they're a little weaker. They could be weaker there on the left side of their defense. But overall, you're talking about very similar teams, and this Kings team, it has to be better. They have more, I think, you know, you add Gabrick into the mix, and you add Toffoli, and you add guys like Lyndon Vey, you add guys like that, I think they have a little bit more scoring depth, but their defense may be a little worse, but Voinov has emerged. So it's a very similar team that has to be better than the team in 2 years ago. Otherwise, they're not going to win.
So I think their D is actually better. The guy that you didn't mention is Jake Muzzin. He's a guy that is now in their top four, and he's a guy that I really like.
Yeah.
And he's a guy that I think would, if you want to look at who you'd compare it to, Robin Regier essentially replaces what Rob Scuderi offered. Rob Scuderi is obviously on Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And then Jake Muzzin is now a guy that is obviously a more defensive role. But it's...
You can put up points,
Jake
Muzzin.
I think, yeah, you can. And I think it's probably up for more debate. I think there's no arguing that the forward depth is better. So, and again, the goaltending hasn't changed much except for the backup position.
We'll find out. It'll be in if we can really revisit the debate if this LA Kings team ends up winning the cup. Although that's really not much of a debate when the 2012 team wins a cup and if the 2014 team wins the cup too. It's a good debate to have from an LA Kings fan's perspective. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment, we go over the new studio hosts for Hockey Night in Canada. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment. I have the honor to turn the mic over to Richard Pollock.
Well, no, just quickly, I have to qualify that I mixed up last year's playoffs and 2 years ago's playoffs. So Willie Mitchell did play for the Kings and they won the cup. He didn't play last year. I apologize for that. So it's more the Regier swap in Scuderi.
Yeah.
And so that's that's an interesting
love. Love Willie Mitchell. Tough stay-at-home defenseman.
Yeah, I don't know.
Was great for Vancouver.
Yeah,
he's a little older now, but I still love Willie Mitchell.
I mixed up that. Anyhow,
that defense is just... Isn't that defense perfect for Daryl Sutter? Like,
it
big,
is a good defense
strong,
for Daryl Sutter.
Mean.
Yeah. It is. I agree with that, and I apologize for that error.
I was going to suggest,
Richie, you never have to apologize to us.
Well, I have to.
Let's be honest here. I do the apologizing on a legal curve. Richie doesn't have to apologize.
I was going
to
suggest we have to implement like a kangaroo court here, like a system of fines in case any of us screw up.
Well, Remus was going to do that, but then he fell asleep on the keyboard.
Well, that's a fine.
I'm kind of worried about that bruise that Remus has on his arm.
From a
pretty big bruise.
Snowboarding.
Yeah, I got on the chairlift wrong and body checked the chairlift.
Did you lick it like Dumb and Dumber, like when they lick the frost?
Sorry, hang on. No. It's not even from falling while snowboarding.
That's
it's from
cool
running into the chairlift.
Yeah,
good thing you have a girlfriend. Otherwise, that wouldn't be a cool bruise. You know,
it's like purple now.
I'll tell you what. If he had a girlfriend, if he didn't have a girlfriend, the story is a whole lot different. I bet you he's all of a sudden he's protecting somebody from an avalanche. You know, he's single-handedly tackling a gigantic snowball and pushing children out of the way.
Reem,
it's a whole different story at that point in time.
Reem, are you sure you didn't get into like a back alley brawl?
No,
after wrestling last weekend,
I lined up for the chairlift two wide left and had to hurry on to make it on, and I fell into the chairlift.
What are your snowboarding skills like, Remus?
I've been twice. I actually got decent by the end of it. You know, heel side, toe side.
I don't know what any of that means.
Reem, what's your roll up the rim count at?
Okay, let's go, boys.
Let's stop counting it.
You gave up?
Once they instituted the bonus rule, I stopped taking it as seriously.
Yeah, that's true.
That thing's a sham.
We'd like to thank Tim Hortons, though, for that great contest.
Yeah, well, I would thank him last week for the trade deadline coffee, but I still...
Yeah.
I can't have it.
I'm on a hot streak right now, but let's not talk about it anymore. Hockey Night in Canada unveiled its new lineup earlier this week, and the new face of hockey in this country is going to
Strombo.
Be George Strombolopoulos.
Yep, your boyfriend.
My boyfriend?
Well, he calls himself your boyfriend.
He calls him what?
Yeah, what?
What do you mean? He calls on the Strombo show. He says it's your favorite boyfriend.
Come on, guys.
Did you guys not watch Strombo?
Wow. You know what? Ezzy comes educated, and Drew comes uneducated.
I'm very uneducated
next
on this
time,
one.
You're not going to tell me that. Now you're going to say that you don't know who, you know, Gian Gomeshi is. I mean, come on. You got to know your CBC
personalities. So my take on the hire, if I can get to that point, before we between the snowboarding and the donut talk, or the coffee talk.
What do you think of Strombo? Is he a good-looking guy?
You know, I don't have any issues with George Stromboulopoulos. I find it very odd that I'm just disappointed that Ron McLean has been pushed to the side so significantly so quickly. And I'm admittedly a traditionalist, but I also certainly think that he does quality work and has for 25 years now. People don't realize that he's only 53 years old, guys. Mm-hmm. He got hired to Hockey Night in Canada in his late 20s. And if you watch him at the Olympics or whatever it may be, it's just such a polished, great interview, great host, and the best in Canada as far as I'm concerned at what he does. And I think he is going to be misused. And that doesn't mean I that's my biggest issue. I'm disappointed about that.
Let me run down the new assignments. George Strombolopoulos is the host of Hockey Night in Canada. Ron McLean and Don Cherry will continue Saturday nights with Coach's Corner.
Which is good, but I mean, you're just dropping McLean in there for 7 minutes and then you're pulling him back out.
Ron McLean will continue to host the Hockey Day in Canada.
Once a year.
And he will be involved in the Sunday night telecast Hometown Hockey Community Celebration, which... it's a mouthful and a half. Darren Millard will host Wednesday Night Hockey, and Jeff Merrick will host Thursday Night Hockey and the weekend pregame shows. The thing is, George Strombolopoulos, you think that the young, the sort of a new generation of hockey fan, he's only, like you said, 12 years younger than Ron McLean. He's 41. So it's not, I don't really believe that any host is going to bring in a new audience.
But is he going to bring
That the game is not going to bring in and of itself.
Is he going to bring in the red couch, though? Is that red couch coming with him or what? You know what? Okay, George Strombolopoulos, this has been such a polarizing topic. I was talking to someone about this after the game yesterday. They're obviously trying to take the show in a different direction, and he's kind of the first step, Richie. And I think he's a guy that knows sports, but recently he's been more kind of in the arts and entertainment industry, if you want to call it that, or the format, I should say, mm-hmm. with his show. Now, he knows sports, but as Richie mentioned, what you're bumping Ron McLean, why, really? Really, because Strombo's coming in, and that's the unfortunate part about it. Ron McLean did the Olympics recently and all that, so it's unfortunate that it's at the expense of Ron McLean. But they're trying to take the show in a different direction, I guess.
I can sort of understand not that Ron McLean might be sort of too tied to the CBC, and you might not want to replicate the entire CBC broadcast or just move it over. But it's not like, I mean, I know that George Strombolopoulos certainly has a sports history, but I still think most people would think of him primarily as a CBC anchor, and if not that, a guy from Much Music before.
I care about is, can he talk hockey?
Right.
Can he talk hockey? That's all I care about.
Yep.
Can he talk hockey? I don't know the answer to that, but I know that the guy before him could talk hockey and was very good at it. That's what I know. It's a very extreme measure very quickly.
That's a primary concern for you. And I agree it's a primary concern for a lot of hockey fans, but I don't think it's a primary concern for the television executives who are always looking to...
Does Ron McLean go on Much Music? Would you watch it?
No, because he doesn't... I mean, I'm not relying on Ron McLean to talk about music.
And I'm not saying he doesn't know anything about music. I'm not saying George Strombolopoulos doesn't know anything about sports. But if you're not a sports fan, you put George Strombolopoulos on Hockey Night in Canada, are you now watching hockey, or are you going to watch some other entertainment show?
You're right. And that's what I think television executives are always looking to try and attract a new audience, sometimes to the detriment of their current audience. You know, they never, you talk about, always you want to protect your base while expanding your base. And right. Oftentimes people simply look for expanding your base at the detriment to your tried and true audience.
How much trouble is Grapes going to have with the name Strombolopoulos?
He doesn't even try it, he said. I already saw that. He doesn't say he's not going to try it. Strombo, he said.
He has trouble with...
I love Grapes, by the way.
Viesca and Longo. Oh, yeah, Grapes is the best.
Grapes, the whole thing is amazing.
He signed a 2-year deal, which is... Normally, he's been on a year-to-year contract with the CBC. So I guess he's going to be around... he's got a 2-year deal there. to start off with the coverage there. Ron McLean signs a four-year deal. I'm not sure about the other length of the contracts about the other guys. To me, the studio aspects and the hosts was the easiest part. And it's going to be more difficult to find, I think, the quality play-by-play men, etc., and the analysts.
Because they're secured at TSN.
Right.
And that's just it, right? And I agree with that. I do agree with that. I mean, if you're looking for talent right now, it's going to be a tough search because they've all re-upped at TSN. Yeah.
Good for Darren Millard, who started with CKND in Winnipeg. So good for him.
That's it for this Thursday edition of NHL Midweek. We'll be back Saturday at 12 noon with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll wrap up the Jets-Rangers game, and of course, we'll get you ready for the Jets-Stars game on Sunday night. Big thank you to tonight's guest, Andrew Gross, the Rangers beat writer for the Record newspaper in New Jersey, and of course, Mike Colligan, who covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for HockeyWriters.com. In case you missed any of it, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, CompuStitch Embroidery Design, Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com. Reminder that next Thursday is NHL Midweek again, as the Jets are in action on Wednesday. For Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening to NHL Midweek.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.